Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Over-the-counter birth control pill in U.S. begins shipping to stores. The first over-the-counter birth control pill will be available in U.S. stores later this month, allowing American women and teens to purchase contraceptive medication as easily as they buy aspirin. Manufacturer Perrigo said Monday it has begun shipping the medication O-Pill to major retailers and pharmacies. A one-month supply will cost about $20, and a three-month supply will cost around $50, according to the company's suggested retail price. It will also be sold online. The launch has been closely watched since last July, when the Food and Drug Administration said the once-a-day O-Pill could be sold without a prescription. Ireland-based Perrigo noted there will be no age restrictions on sales, similar to other over-the-counter medications. O-Pill is an older class of contraceptives, sometimes called mini-pills, that contain a single synthetic hormone, progestin, and generally carry fewer side effects than more popular combination estrogen and progestin pills. The launch gives U.S. women another birth control option amid the legal and political battles over reproductive health, including the reversal of Roe v. Wade, which has upended abortion across the U.S. O-Pill's approval is unrelated to the ongoing court battles over the abortion pill mifepristone, and anti-abortion groups have generally emphasized that they do not oppose contraceptives to prevent pregnancies. Birth control pills are available without a prescription across much of South America, Asia, and Africa. The drug's approval came despite some concerns by FDA scientists about the company's results, including whether women with certain medical conditions would understand that they shouldn't take the drug. Dr. Verda Hicks, president of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, in a statement said, "Studies have shown that patients, including adolescents, can effectively screen themselves to use the pill." Board approves last piece of boundary repurposing plan. The last piece of a revamping of school boundaries and campus configurations was approved by the Ector County ISD Board of Trustees Monday during a special meeting. Boundary changes for Zavala and the potential repurposing of Travis Elementary were approved by trustees Tuesday. During its February meeting, trustees unanimously approved a series of changes involving four elementary schools. The board approved repurposing Burleson Elementary School as a pre-kindergarten center starting in 2025-26, approved a kindergarten through fifth grade boundary for Noel Elementary. The new attendance zone will go into effect in August 2024. Approved an expanded attendance boundary for San Jacinto Elementary that will go into effect in August 2024. Students in the current Burleson attendance zone will be rezoned to attend either Noel or San Jacinto Elementary. Approved an attendance zone for Pease Elementary taking effect in August 2024. Pease will be the location of a new International Baccalaureate Primary Years program, a new choice offering for students. The changes were made to bring families back together in kindergarten through fifth grade neighborhood schools. It also is meant to right-size schools to maximize facility use and efficiency, give more children access to high-quality seats in A and B rated schools, expand pre-kindergarten, and expand choice school options. In 2018, and accountability purposes, the board combined the attendance zones and reconfigured the grade level for Pease Noel and Zavala Travis Elementary Schools. This change meant Pease served the students in pre-kindergarten through second, and Noel served the same students in third through fifth, with the same arrangement for Zavala, pre-kindergarten through second, and Travis, third through fifth grades. Today, all four campuses are in good academic standing, and the opportunity exists to bring these elementary families back together into one building, according to district information. Parents and staff meetings were held, and Chief of Schools Keeley Boyer said the feedback was positive. The repurposing of Travis would bring some cost savings to the school district, as eliminating utility and staff could save approximately $566,000 next year. Repurposing Burleson will save $690,000. It is important to note, while positions would not exist at Travis, the people who work there now will have other spots in the district available to them if they choose, the information said. Boyer said there were mainly questions from people at the meetings, and several parents said it was more convenient for them to be in one school and not have kids at two different schools. Board member Delma Abalos said she was glad a second meeting was held, but she's sorry the district didn't do a better job of making the choice program at Travis better. It was science and technology, she said. But at the end of the day, we do what we have to do that benefits our kids. I just wish we'd done a better job of making this a better choice school, Abalos said. Trustee Don Miller, appearing virtually, said she also appreciated the second meeting. I would ask in the future that we always do all modes of communication for parents, text, robocall, email, and paper in homework folders when it's something of this gravity. But in addition to that, I think we had started this conversation earlier so that the community could have been involved in even the thought pattern. Having gone to winter governance and hearing how a district did exactly what we're doing, repurposing and restructuring, they included the community even at the onset when they were just thinking about it, versus it being completely board-led based on recommendations from the administrative cabinet. Not that we don't trust your word, but it just builds in a great deal more of support when the community feels that they're a part of it versus we're just saying this is what's going to happen and it's already done, Miller said. I just hope we front-load a great deal more in the future on things of this nature, she added. Superintendent Scott Murray said the district notified the Travis Elementary students' families that they'll have first priority in the magnet lottery. I think tomorrow, March 5th, all these families will be notified, and they'll actually have first dibs on those seats, Murray said. As for repurposing Travis, Murray said they have heard the idea of using it for childcare. We live in a childcare desert right now. There just aren't enough options for families, and we've heard from our own Chamber of Commerce and the Workforce Commission that there's a significant need in our community for that. Certainly, that's one of the opportunities we've looked at, but we have a variety of other things, and certainly community input and some conversations will be important in the coming months, Mary said. Information will be going out to parents of Travis students from the district and the principal outlining opportunities to those students. They will certainly attend to all that elementary, again, pre-K through 5th, or we're going to put those because we've had an opportunity to participate in the magnet lottery, as which is occurring right now for those students, and so they'll have that chance, if they're interested, in attending one of the magnet schools in ECISD, Murray said. Murray said the district is reopening the magnet lottery. Only those students will have first priority, so they'll have a few days to enter the lottery before we open it up to the rest of the district, Murray said. Friday night crashes take two lives. Two people were killed on Permian Basin roads Friday. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, Peter Edwin Boughton, 32, of Lufkin, was driving a Toyota Corolla South on FM 1788 in Andrews County when he struck a northbound Dodge Ram 2500 while trying to pass another vehicle when it wasn't safe. Lufkin was pronounced dead at the scene, and the men in the Dodge, a 54-year-old El Paso man and a 22-year-old Rio Grande man, were taken to area hospitals with serious injuries. The crash remains under investigation. On Friday night, a Las Cruces, New Mexico girl was killed in Ward County in another two-vehicle crash. According to DPS, a 50-year-old Las Cruces woman was traveling on eastbound Interstate Highway 20 in a Toyota SUV when she struck a Cadillac CTS that was disabled on the roadway due to a previous crash and had no lights on. The Toyota driver, who suffered serious injuries, and her passenger were taken to Ward Memorial Hospital, where her passenger was pronounced deceased. The 25-year-old Cadillac driver was taken to the hospital with serious injuries as well, DPS stated. The crash also remains under investigation.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Permian Proud for March 1st, 2024 by Staff Report. Midland Legacy FFA travels north with 7 trailers of supplies for wildfire victims. Students and staff from the Midland Legacy High FFA program headed to the Panhandle today with 7 trailers of food and supplies to help fellow agricultural families impacted by the Smokehouse Creek wildfire. Once the donations are delivered, volunteers will help rescue livestock stranded by the fire, according to Midland ISD. As a part of the fundraising effort, a Legacy High freshman named Mady helped inspire a local church to spring into action. On Thursday, Mady told members of the First Presbyterian Church of Midland that the Legacy FFA chapter was collecting relief supplies to take to the Fretch ISD FFA chapter. The church reported that its local mission ministry convened via email and approved sponsoring a $10,000 shopping spree at Tractor Supply. Members of the Legacy FFA department were then able to purchase donations they felt were needed to finish filling up their trailers. The 7 trailers headed to the Panhandle includes a whole trailer of hay headed to the disaster area. "Our contribution was a small part of the total," church representatives said. "Everyone mobilized quickly and worked together to love our neighbors up north. Thank you to the teachers and students and Midlanders who spent their day getting these supplies together, and to our church family for so generously giving so that we can quickly respond to needs like this when they arise," added Midland ISD. "Thanks to everyone who donated to help pack trailers with food and supplies. We are so thankful that MISD students and staff care about others in the time of their greatest need." Find this story in audio for blind and low vision adults, 2 p.m. daily, on the Recording Library of West Texas radio station, www.recordinglibrary.org, live stream. March 1st, 2024, by Staff Report. Hector County ISD will receive 21 new pianos thanks to a $200,000 grant. The Education Foundation of Odessa received the grant from the FMH Foundation. In 2019, ECISD Fine Arts Department embarked on a quest to provide all campuses with good quality pianos. Over the last 4 years, the district replaced 20 pianos, 4 of which were funded by previous grants from the FMH Foundation, according to ECISD. The funds will help the district finalize its piano overhaul project, bringing in a combination of traditional acoustic pianos and digital pianos, the ECISD stated. The quality pianos will also benefit students from other areas like Andrews, Big Spring, and Midland, who will use them for rehearsals and performances. ECISD also notes they will enable distance education with colleges and universities and provide opportunities for master classes, piano instruction, voice lessons, and guest performances. performances. We are incredibly grateful to the FMH Foundation for once again helping us provide support to the art in ECISD, says Education Foundation Executive Director Celeste Potter. Through this grant, the Education Foundation is able to extend its reach and ensures that not only our students today have the equipment they need to be successful in the arts, but that the students of tomorrow will benefit from this partnership as well. Find this story in Audio for Blind and Low Vision Adults, 2 p.m. daily on the Recording Library of West Texas radio station, www.recordinglibrary.org live stream. March 1st, 2024, by staff report. Ector County ISD will receive 21 new pianos thanks to a $200,000 grant. The Education Foundation of Odessa received the grant from the FMH Foundation. In 2019, ECISD Fine Arts Department embarked on a quest to provide all campuses with good quality pianos. Over the last 4 years, the district replaced 20 pianos, four of which were funded by previous grants from the FMH Foundation, according to ECISD. The funds will help the district finalize its piano overhaul project, bringing in a combination of traditional acoustic pianos and digital pianos, the ECISD stated. The quality pianos will also benefit students from other areas like Andrews, Big Spring, and Midland, who will use them for rehearsals and performances. ECISD also notes they will enable distance education with colleges and universities and provide opportunities for master classes, piano instruction, voice lessons, and guest performances. We are incredibly grateful to the FMH Foundation for once again helping us provide support to the art in ECISD, says Education Foundation Executive Director Celeste Potter. Through this grant, the Education Foundation is able to extend its reach and ensures that not only our students today have the equipment they need to be successful in the arts, but that the students of tomorrow will benefit from this partnership as well. Find this story in Audio for Blind and Low Vision Adults, 2 p.m. daily. On the Recording Library of West Texas radio station, www.recordinglibrary.org live stream.
Mom convicted of strangling and starving son to death. A West Odessa woman will be spending the rest of her life in prison after being convicted of capital murder Thursday in the November 2022 death of her 8-year-old son, who weighed 35 pounds when authorities said he was strangled to death. An Ector County jury found Megan Lang, 30, guilty of capital murder, which carries an automatic life with no parole sentence. She was also convicted of injury to a child and injury to a child by omission, said Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan. The jury returned to Judge Justin Lowe's courtroom on Friday and sentenced Lang to 2 life sentences on the child abuse charges, Gallivan said. She had been facing anywhere from 5 years to life on those accounts, which will run concurrently to the no parole life sentence. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, dispatchers received a call on November the 5th, 2022, about an unresponsive child from the 200 block of North Huntington Avenue. And when deputies arrived, they found firefighters performing life-saving measures on Arturo Francisco Coca. Arturo was taken to Medical Center Hospital, but life-saving measures performed there were unsuccessful. Investigators and hospital staff noticed Arturo appeared malnourished and small for his age, according to the report. They also saw that he had lacerations on his head, legs, and back. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths told the Odessa American the boy weighed 35 pounds. Lang told authorities Arturo had woken up after defecating and urinating on himself, so she carried him to the bathroom, bathed him, and took him into the living room, the report stated. She called 911, she said, because she was talking to him when his head fell back and she realized he wasn't breathing. Investigators learned through 6 other children in the home that Arturo's stepfather, Rondolfo Reyes, 33, was also home when the boy died, the report stated. Reyes acknowledged he was home the day Arturo died, but denied hurting him, the report stated. He later requested legal counsel and didn't provide any other information. At the time, Griffiths said Lang and Reyes attributed to the boy's death to diabetes, but a forensic pathologist ruled the cause of Arturo's death was asphyxiation by manual strangulation with underlying causes of neglect. He found the boy to be malnourished, and he saw hemorrhaging in his neck. Both were arrested on suspicion of capital murder of a child under the age of 10 and injury to a child. Reyes was later indicted on a single charge of injury to a child by omission. He was deemed incompetent to stand trial at one point and went through a competency restoration program. It's unclear from court records what his current status is, but Ector County jail records show he remains in custody. Last October, Reyes wrote a letter to Lowe saying he couldn't hold back all the things Lang had done to Arturo. He claimed Lang often put a jalapeno or hot sauce on the boy's penis when he urinated on himself, put holes in the walls throughout their house by throwing Arturo at them, slap him in the face and force him to sleep in a closet, and sleep standing up. Reyes further claimed Lang told Arturo she hated him and wished he died. My God. Quick hits. See the Circus. Paranormal Circus is scheduled March the 7th through the 10th at the Ector County Coliseum in the parking lot under the white and black big top tent. Purchase tickets through the website paranormalcircue.com/tickets or by phone at 941-704-8572. They also respond to text messages. Literacy Coalition. In Midland, are you ready to learn English or take the next step in your career? The Literacy Coalition and the Midland County Public Library will begin to offer English as a second language. Classes start March the 4th at the Downtown Municipal Library, 301 West Missouri Avenue in Midland. The classes will take place Mondays and Wednesdays from 5 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., with some Saturdays also. These classes are free and offered to help you learn and improve your English. Classes start in March and go through May 2024. Call the Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin at 432-685-0428, extension 3, to register. A placement test will be required to enroll in the class. You will receive a certificate upon completion of the class. For more information, please contact Caitlin Lipham at katelyn@redpixelmarketing.com. Tuesday is primary day in Texas. Tuesday is primary day in Texas, and polls are open 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. in Ector County. Voters may vote in either the Democratic or Republican primary. What's on the ballot? Everything from a presidential pick all the way down to precinct party chairs. In the March 5th primary election, Texans will be narrowing candidates for these elected offices within the Democratic and Republican parties. The candidate who wins the majority, or more than half, of votes in a race will face candidates from other parties in the November general election. If no candidate gets a majority of votes in a race, the top two vote-getters will head to a May 28th primary runoff election. The Green and Libertarian parties select their candidates through a series of local conventions beginning March 12th and a state convention that each party needs to announce by then. In Texas, voters can only vote in one party's primary and runoff or in a third party's convention. In Ector County, all offices will be decided in the primary as there are no Democratic challengers. Republicans Congressman August Pfluger, Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths, and District Attorney Dusty Gallivan didn't draw any opponents, and State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican from Odessa, is unopposed for his sixth term in the state legislature. A political newcomer, Anthony Julie Prestes, is also unopposed in her bid to replace Lee McClendon as Ector County Attorney.
Worry over cancer risk with Barrett's esophagus. Dear Dr. Roach, After many years of dealing with reflux, I have now developed Barrett's esophagus. The biopsy said Barrett's intestinal metaplasia. After speaking to the nurse at my gastroenterologist's office, she explained that they were the same thing. Needless to say, I'm a bit concerned knowing that this diagnosis is a precursor to esophageal cancer. I am really careful with my diet and have adjusted to having very little caffeine, chocolate, tomato sauce, and other things that may cause acid production. Having a motility test done recently, I was told that my reflux isn't my main issue and that it's actually the very slow motility of my esophagus. What are your thoughts on this? Am I destined to end up with a cancer diagnosis? I am pretty scared. P.O. Answer. Food goes down the esophagus through the lower esophageal sphincter, LES, and into the stomach. The lining of the stomach is specially adapted to the strong chemicals needed for digestion, which can damage other cells. Stomach contents, including acid and bile, are not supposed to get into the esophagus. However, in many people, stomach contents do go backward, reflux, through the sphincter and into the esophagus. If this happens for long periods of time, the lining of the esophagus changes in response to acid and bile, which is known as metaplasia. This protects it against chemicals, but it also predisposes people to cancer. While I fully understand being scared of developing cancer of the esophagus, fortunately, it is not common. On average, 0.25% of people with Barrett's will develop cancer each year. Your risk for developing esophageal cancer is higher than people who don't have Barrett's, plus it's still low overall. Your gastroenterologist will likely recommend periodic screening of your esophagus to look for any precursor lesions of cancer. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida 32853-6475.
This is the Dear Abby column. Woman's failing health is wearing down family. Dear Abby, my husband speaks to his mom every morning. For the past couple of months, her health has been failing, and she spends most of her days in the hospital, having an extremely tough time. Hearing his mom suffer daily is affecting my husband's mental health. It sets the tone for the whole day, and I spend my mornings trying to cheer him up. How do I tell him these daily conversations with his mom are starting to affect my mornings? Even the dog has been showing signs of depression. Would I be selfish to suggest he needs to talk to her at a different time, or maybe on fewer days? Signed, Bystander in California. Dear Bystander, your husband may not have much longer to talk with his very ill mother, so I don't recommend you approach the subject that way. What I do suggest is that you tell your husband how much you love him and that you can see and feel his distress over her condition. Then suggest he talk with a mental health professional who can help him work this through, because you can see how much pain this is causing him. Then cross your fingers and hope he will realize how much he needs it. Dear Abby, I am writing this in the hope that the man of my dreams reads it. I don't know how to approach him. He's getting ready to retire, and I have fallen deeply in love with him as the years have gone by. He's a little on the chubby side, as am I, but his personality has always amused me. Sometimes he poses sexy as a joke and will often show his belly button. I find him staring at me out of the corner of his eye most days. Please help before it's too late. I'm running out of time. Signed, His Dream Guy in Tennessee. Dear Dream Guy, you stated that your dream man is getting to retire. I can't think of a better reason for a celebration. Suggest the two of you go out for a drink or dinner after work, so you can toast his upcoming retirement. Then cross your fingers that he agrees. It could be the start of something beautiful. Dear Abby, my husband suffered a stroke 8 years ago. Everyone thinks he is fine physically and mentally, except those closest to him. We know his brain doesn't function the same. Example, when he went to fill out a job application, he asked me whose name should be put in the applicant field. He occasionally had a short temper, but in recent months he has grown verbally abusive to the point that I'm considering divorcing him. Anything can set him off, and there is no correct reaction from me. I am going to seek counseling. Any other advice for me? Signed, Ready to Leave in Delaware. Dear Reddy, I do have one other bit of advice. You stated that everyone thinks your husband is fine physically and mentally. Are you including his doctors in that statement? Forgetting to put one's own name on a job application and having a recent personality change could be signs of dementia. You should let them know you are worried so he can be evaluated. You can contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.